The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
I swear, Mark, I felt like we just sat down yesterday and did one of these shows. Did we not? Did we just do a UAB director's chair like a couple of days ago? And I'm sitting down.
It just feels so good, Tony. It's just so much fun. It just feels like time flies, man.
I mean, I'm sitting there. I'm getting ready. And I got the kids this morning. And we're getting ready for the holidays. And I thought, what do I have today? What do I have today? It's Thursday. I was like, oh, I got the UAB director's chair. And I was like, man, I swear. And I thought, well, did we do one early because of the holidays? I'm like, no, it's just time is flying by and time flies. Don't worry, having a good time. And we certainly have a good time with the show. He is Mark Ingram. He's the athletic director for the UAB Blazers, UABSports.com, UABSports.com. We have a lot to talk about. All athletics going on with UAB Sports. And of course, just a wonderful time of the year with basketball in full flame right now. We have, of course, the bowl system going on as well. Unfortunately, UAB not part of that next year. Certainly, Trent Dilfer will have his squad ready to go. And we have some email questions. But first of all, how are you doing? How are you doing for the holidays? We are recording here on this Thursday, so we're 4 days away from baby Jesus's birthday coming up on Monday. But how are you getting through the holidays? You got a full family? What's going on with you?
Yeah, it's been fun. We've got our two college kids in, and of course, we got two high schoolers that are, you know, still living with us. But anyway, it's fun to have all four of them at the house, and you know, a couple of them have serious girlfriends or boyfriends, and so those kids are around and they're friends, and it's also fun to see, you know, their old high school friends, guys and girls that have gone off to college, and we haven't seen them in a while, so it's just nice to see them and have them all back in the house. And it's been fun. It's fun to watch them interact. And they're not adults yet, but they're getting, you know, they're sort of early young adults that are getting there, and it's fun to watch them interact. And the interaction with them is different because they don't live, of the two that don't live with us, you can really feel how much they are growing as people, you know, and just how much older they're getting as people, and their maturity level changes, and the things that they want to talk about and that they're interested in are very different than talking about prom.
Let me back up just a little bit, because I've been around your family, not a lot. We haven't been on vacation together or even had dinner together, but I've been around and some of your boxes and some of your games. And I know how close you are with your family, and your family, for people that don't know, do a lot of things with you. You are an athletic director. Yep. So you got to go to tennis matches, and you got to go to volleyball matches, and you got to go to softball games, and you have to go to basketball and football games. And so I see your wife and your family around you a lot. And then even for peripheral things that have something to do with maybe UAB, maybe it's a boxing match or something, I'll see you with your son. Yep. And I love that about you. But, you know, Dr. Josh Klepa, who's one of my best friends, who's a psychologist of all people. And of course, he has a son who wants to be a psychologist. He has a daughter who's into special needs help, and she's going to be something special. He talks exactly about what you just said, about when they leave the coop, they leave the nest, and then they come back and they're just a little different because they're no longer under your roof. And so you had that as a parent, like, okay, you now live your own life. You're outside. And obviously what happens under my roof stays under my roof, and it's my roof, my roof, my rules. So I'm assuming you still have that type of thing, but just talk a little bit about how that feels as a father, because I'm going to be going, I got that with my 19-year-old son who is now at Clemson. He doesn't have his own place. He's living in a dorm room and stuff. And so he's kind of forced living. But when he does have his own place, I could certainly see where, I'm not saying any awkward silence, but it's probably a little different, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And but you know what? Even though that he's in a dorm, he's still having to figure out how to feed himself and do his laundry. And hey, there's nobody there to wake him up in the morning. Hey, man, you got to get him go. Have you done your homework yet? You know, he's still dealing with all that stuff, which, you know, he used to have you to lean on. You were going to do that because you know to do that as a responsible adult. And anyway, it's been a ton of fun. We love that. And we've enjoyed our kids as they've gotten older. I miss them being little because it just means I'm getting older. But holidays have been fun, and we're looking forward to it. And so we'll be with some family, my family, and then we'll go up to Cincinnati, which is where my wife's family is. It's 7.5 hours. We always go there the day after Christmas. And her sister has 4 kids. Her brother has 3 kids. And so we'll get all the cousins together, you know, so that's, what is it, 11 grandkids for her dad. And anyway, it's always fun.
My old stomping grounds up there in Cincinnati, yep. Ohio, and my son has been pining for a couple of Cincinnati Bengals games he wants from Santa Claus to put under the tree. I don't know if that's going to happen by Monday or not. But yeah, we love that area of the country, and certainly fun to get back to your old stomping grounds. And one final question that I'll ask you from a father to a father, and this is certainly nothing we've rehearsed. I think it's really interesting because, and maybe this is a generational thing that you had with your father. My dad was like, you know, at the age of 18, it's time for you to get out of here and go do your own thing. And knowing that my dad would never kick me out of the house. And it was funny because I did have a job opportunity when I was 18 to move to Louisville, Kentucky. And I think my mom was more prepared for that than my father was. I think he just was really surprised. Back in our generation, my dad worked 60 hours a week. I didn't see him a ton during the week. We weren't this throwing the softball out in the front yard type of family. I didn't see him. He worked a third shift, so I didn't see him a lot at night. And you know, if we had recitals and things, he wasn't there for those things. But we had a really, really special, close relationship later on in his life as I got a little older. And then all of a sudden I'm leaving. And I think it really bummed him out. Then when I had the opportunity to move back home at the age of, I think I was 19 or close to 20, because I had 2 years of college under my belt at Xavier, and things weren't really working out the way I wanted them to in this broadcasting career that I thought I was going to have some wonderful career in. This isn't working out, and little did I know I'd end up putting 40 years into it. It seemed to do pretty good for the Curry family, and I'm blessed for that. But I remember going back home, and my dad was so excited that I was going to be moving back home with them. Now, that never happened, because then I ended up getting another job and just kind of linked the two together. And I think that broke his heart a second time. But can you talk a little bit as a father, since you have two that are out, you have two that are in school. Have you had that discussion with your wife, or do you have that in your brain? What's going to happen if, in fact, you're obviously a very successful athletic director at a big time school? People look at you as a wonderful father figure. I see you around your kids. And so you don't seem to be the type of dad that would allow your kid to be 28 years old living in the basement of the Ingram home. But do you think about things like that?
Yeah, you know, so we have two boys and two girls. And when the boys, by the time the boys were 10, I had made it very clear to them and to the girls. I've said to the boys, listen, when you turn 18 and you graduate from high school, whatever happens second, you know, what you got to graduate from high school. But once you get to that point, you're out. I looked at the two girls. I was like, you can live here with mom and me forever. And that's the way I feel about it. I love the boys. You got to get out. You smell bad. You're dirty. You got to go get jobs. Girls, if you want to stay here with me and mom, yeah, let me hug on you. That's okay with that. That's so hilarious. I've been very transparent with my kids about that from the beginning. I'm kidding, obviously. But we just try to help them solve their own problems. I'm trying not to get in the way of their issues. I've never been up to the high school to complain about some teacher or something. I've never gone to the principal to fuss about a thing that happened. I've never called their coach to say, hey, I don't appreciate the way you're handling this. Mm-hmm. I've never done that. Now, if there's something that they tell me about that they think is, you know, that they're being wronged about, whatever, I try to, as does my wife, we will talk to them about, well, how did you respond? Or, you know, what did you say and what led to that? And did you consider this? Did you, you know, maybe tomorrow what you can do is say to the teacher, say to the coach, whatever, why don't you go up to them and say this? And we try to help them understand that if they're not yelling, that their question is appropriate. Mm-hmm. It's more about how you ask the question that becomes inappropriate, right? Don't raise your voice at this person. They're an adult, you know, but it's okay to ask a question. Hey, coach, I really feel like I have improved in this area. You know, I'd like an opportunity to try blank, you know, or I think I could do better if I was in this position instead of that position, whatever. So that's been our whole thing, is try to help them solve their problems. But your question is, if they were 28, look, I'm going to help my kids. I'm not going to let them go bankrupt if I can help it. But I think a little bit of failure is a good thing. I think you've got to fail to appreciate success. And I think you got to learn how to fight through adversity, which is something that unfortunately the kids of this day and age aren't very good at.
Yeah. No, I think you're spot on. And that kind of takes me into our first email, info@tonycurryradio.net. I always like people, and I certainly try to be around people that that certainly have mentored my life, including yourself, and I learned from, and I always feel smarter talking to these individuals. But I always remember that there are no failures, there's just learning experiences.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, the most successful people in the world are the ones that continually fail over and over and over again, but they make those learning experiences so they know not to do those things again, and they can learn from those experiences in and of themselves. But I think it's really interesting now with this transfer portal, which we have talked a lot about here in the last couple of weeks. We mentioned that there was a record number of transfer portals, I guess, a week ago this past Monday. And now roughly 22-23%, whatever it is, of all student athletes are in the transfer portal. And we've talked about that commitment. You go visit, and assuming you're a 4 or 5 or even a 3-star, maybe a 2-star kid, and you've gone around to 5 or 6 different schools that are interested in you. You've looked at the status. You've looked at their resources. You've looked at the tradition. You've looked at the university itself. And then you make your pick. Based off those visitors, and hopefully you put in a lot of time into that, and you do the pros and the cons, and then you decide, I'm going to go to this school, and that's the school that you were going to go to. And unless, grandma was sick, or maybe there was a death in the family, or you were just incredibly homesick, whatever, there was a reason why you needed to move closer back to home or whatever, you would be granted that transfer. And now, of course, it is wide open. Now with commitment day, of course, a national signing day, early signing period that started yesterday as we record the show on a Thursday. I just wonder, what's national signing day to an athletic director now at a university? Is it special anymore? Does it mean anything knowing that 1 out of the 5 kids that are committing to your school on average are probably going to want to go somewhere else, at least down the road?
Well, now that we've made the, it appears that we're going to move towards unlimited transfers.
Yep.
Based on the judge in West Virginia's ruling, that number is only going to increase, Tony. That number is only going to move. The only reason it's only 22% or whatever you saw is because historically, once they transfer, they can't do it again. So now we're going to see more of that. That's just going to increase. Yeah, signing day is still exciting. The difference is that, used to signing day was the first Wednesday of February. That's when it used to be, which this year is February the 7th. So it could be the first or the third or whatever, but it was the first Wednesday of February. And there used to be just like all day coverage on ESPN and all your news outlets about, as the fax, and that's what it was through a fax machine, as the faxes would come in. You made it public, and then it was up in the news, and people would update their website or whatever, and it would get out there, and it became.
And for people that didn't hear that, again, with the fax machine.
That
is something that we've done, like as recent as like the last couple of years. The girl would be standing at the fax machine. There would be I think University of Alabama had the fax cam with a girl standing by the fax machine as the information came. That's how we
Here
found
comes.
Out. Yeah, that's how
you
we
hear
found
the
out.
Noise. Here yeah. comes. Yeah, but it used to be an all day event, and now because we've gone to an early signing period. And this was really done on behalf of the student athlete was the idea. It was like, at this point, they're tired of it. At this point, they're really ready for it to be done. And you think, well, what's another 2 months or 8-7 weeks? Well, it's the holidays and starting a new semester. And it was really just they're ready to be done. And I think the coaches are ready to be done. And so if they've made their decision, let's just let them go ahead and sign. And that's how that came about. But it has become sort of anticlimactic because it's also right in the middle of bowl season and that kind of thing. So you've got a lot of staffs who are off somewhere at a bowl site, and they're trying to manage that. They're trying to manage the early signing period while, in Tampa or someplace or Phoenix off away from their campus. So that is a challenge that got layered in there that I don't want to say nobody thought about, but it's harder than you realize, especially if signing day hasn't happened. These early bowl games, like the thing about the ones that have already been played, they were off doing bowl prep and on location practicing while we were all traveling around seeing recruits.
Yeah.
And so that's a disadvantage to those schools. So that's, to me, that's a bit of a problem that it's almost like you get punished for having a good enough year to get to a bowl game. And then your competitors who didn't get to a bowl game are out beating you. Or if they have a later bowl game, you know, not just the ones that didn't go, but a later bowl game, they are at your disadvantage because they're out hustling around the players that you've been trying to recruit. So it's not ever going to be perfect. It's still exciting. It's exciting to see the new players. We got 17 new players that we signed yesterday, and exciting to see where they're coming from. And some transfers, yes, but mostly high school kids and a few junior college guys, but in sort of a traditional way. So, I'm excited about the class. It looks really, really good and fills a lot of holes that we have needs.
One of the really cool things, we're talking to Mark Ingram. He's the UAB athletic director. This is called the UAB Director's Chair. You can hear it 5 days a week on the TKR app and wherever you get your favorite podcast, on the Tony Curry Radio Facebook page. He's on the left side. I'm on the right side, obviously. Interesting, too, because I know that whenever we made coaching hires, and certainly we've seen a lot of that towards the end of the college football season, we'll see more over the next couple of weeks, couple of months, that kind of coincided with national signing days. Well, okay, do we want to get a coach in here before national sign? Do we want to do it, you know, during the middle of the season, or do we wait to the after the season because these coaches have recruited these kids and maybe they had a really good relationship with these kids, and all of a sudden we're throwing this coach? There was a lot to play into it, but one of the things that I remember so vividly doing sports radio was whether a coach was a good recruiter or not. He could be a great X's and O's kind of coach. And that's super, but he wasn't a great recruiter. And then there were other guys that, quite frankly, would never probably be a head coach, but were great recruiters. They really could get out there and hit the recruiting trail. How has this whole change in college sports and the transfer portal, and knowing that, again, 20% of the kids more than likely will be moving on somewhere else, has that changed in how you look at hires for other coaches and other sports?
Well, recruiting has changed so much because of these things.
Yeah.
This is what's changed recruiting, is this constant conversation, texting back and forth, and graphic imagery from your program. That's changed significantly. You know, like if I wanted to speak to you through Twitter X, I've got to try to connect with you, and then I've got to follow you. You got to follow me back.
Yep.
And then we can have a conversation. But like a lot of coaches, they'll get players or fans, whatever, that follow them, but they don't follow them back because they don't want to have that conversation. So even the most subtle gesture of a coach following a prospect back tells the prospect, hey, you're kind of important, you know. And so I even had a coach tell me one time at a Big Ten school, he said, he's like, look, I wouldn't want a prospect to think that I'm rude or whatever, he said, but our fans know who I follow. And if I followed your son or followed a player back, our fans immediately think that's who we're going to try to sign. Mm-hmm. And I'm really just trying to open my communication with that person in a healthy kind of due diligence fashion. And because our fans lock onto it. And next thing you know, I got reporters asking me, are you going to sign Tony Curry? And I'm like, man, I'm just trying to talk to the kid. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so it's anyway, that's changed a lot, but the timing of it all is it's important. I think that's why you see coaches, you know, or ADs and schools making changes well before the last game, which used to not happen. Not that it never happened, but it didn't happen that often. But now it's happening in the middle of the season because, yes, they need a replacement in there because of this early signing period, which, you know, this year was December 20th. Sometimes it's actually a few days earlier. And so you got to get a new coach in with a staff in place so that they can either salvage the kids that have been committed or tell those kids, hey, listen, I know the previous staff had a commitment from you, but you're a fullback and our offense doesn't run a fullback, and I'm sorry, but you know, we're not gonna sign you because you don't fit our system. And you're also trying to do right by the kid the best you can, which is awful and difficult for the player who they evaluated, got offered, and made a decision that they wanted to come, let's just say, to UAB, and then you come in and go, man, I'm sorry, you're just not fitting our system. You know, those conversations with every single transition out there, that's happening. And you know, or yeah, look, we're going to have wide receivers, but Tony, we just don't think you're quite good enough. And we've got another guy that we think's a little bit better, and we're going to take him instead of you. And you're like, man, I've been committed for 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, it's that, that is the brutal, ruthless part of recruiting. But while nobody ever wants to show any remorse or care for the coaches, these are people who are grown professional adults who have worked probably, if you're talking about the Division I level, they've probably been doing this for a while. They've worked very hard to move up the sort of in their career ladder to this level. And they have families and they're trying to do a great job. They're measured strictly on winning. And so they got to have good players to win games. And so I know everybody will say, oh, it's all about student athlete. Well, it's not all about the student athlete. I mean, that's a nice thing to say. What does that mean? Well, yeah, we want to take great care of our student athletes. We want them to get a college degree. We want their help to be healthy and safe and cared for. Yes, all true. But like, I care about our staff too.
Sure.
You know, as I hope that you would care that I care about your staff if you worked here, you know. So those things are layered into it also, but just that's a hard part of the business.
I think conference realignment really just hit me hard about a week ago when I saw the SEC. It just means more commercials, where you saw Oklahoma and Texas and their insignia, if you will, on that page with those other 14 schools. And it just was like, wait a minute. And then, of course, when they released the SEC scheduling, you know, you see Auburn going to Norman, or you see, you know, someone going to Austin. You're like, wait a minute, are they playing a non? Oh, that's right. I just remembered.
But I think they've gone away from divisions.
You just see the words Norman.
Like Mississippi or Austin, State, who has always played Alabama, isn't going to.
Exactly. And so it did change things. And all of a sudden, you know, in a game where, you know, you'd have one huge non-conference game, whether that be against a Boise State or against a Wisconsin or for UAB against a Georgia. Now all of a sudden you're going to have a Texas and an Oklahoma's thrown in there. And that's not a non-conference game. It's a game you got to play. It's a huge game. And so that's really changed things for me. We had an email here, info@tonycurryradio.net from John in Northport. He is reading about this FSU situation out of the ACC. I have not been well-tersed in this particular story. I've certainly read up on it and I kind of heard what's going on behind the scenes. But as an athletic director, what's your thoughts on what's going there? And it appears that there may be, is this another domino falling here from a major conference standpoint?
It certainly could be. The grant of rights in the ACC is expensive. The buyout is, you know, I don't know, $50 million or $55 million or something. Like, it's a big number. They wouldn't be looking if they didn't have interest in moving, I guess, is the only way to say it. But at the moment, it appears as though they're trying to understand, what do we have to do? If, in fact, we chose to leave, what would that mean? I think right now it's exploratory in nature. But again, why would you explore it if you didn't have interest in doing something? So it's certainly a signal to all of us. And Florida State's the one getting the attention, but I don't think they're the only ones in the league that have done this. So, like, their lawyers, I understand, have been to the ACC office to meet with ACC league office lawyers and staff to have this conversation. But I don't think Florida State's the only school in that league that's done that. So it could be completely benign and they're just trying to understand, because the league's expanding and they want to know has that changed or not? I don't know. Or they're trying to make a play down the road and they want to know what it's going to require to do it.
What can conferences do to protect themselves at this point? I know there's a $33, $34 million buyout, I think it is, something like that. I mean, you could put the biggest price tag in the world. Money does not
seem
to
be. That's what they do.
Money doesn't seem to be an issue anymore, though.
That's all they can do.
Yeah, it's all they can do. Because, you know, I mean, just 6-7 months ago, it seemed like the Pac-12 was solid as I certainly thought it was. And next thing you know, UCLA and USC are leaving and the whole thing falls apart. Now, of course, you're talking about, and I'm just trying to think from an SEC standpoint, if you're Greg Sankey, what do you do to protect your conference? Obviously, it is as strong, or it should be as strong as it's ever been. And you would think the SEC will never fall apart. Well, hell, we never thought that about the Pac-12 or the ACC either. What are we doing? Or how important is it to create these things? And do these schools, how does that work as an athletic director? Do these schools sit down and have meetings amongst themselves without the commissioners of the leagues? How does that work?
Yeah,
I mean, it almost sounds like people trying to go into some type of labor agreement. You know, everyone's wanting to get into these unions now. Is this a union feel to you?
Well, I think that could happen. I mean, I think there's a real possibility that student athletes become employees and they start to collectively bargain with us, which is terrible. And it's just a misunderstanding of the people who are in favor of that. It's just a gross misunderstanding of really everything about college sports. They just sort of grandstand and say, oh, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry and all this, and which it's not. I mean, I guess as an industry, if you take every single university and add them together, and you take every shoe company and add them together, and take every other athletic-related thing in college athletics and add them all together, is that multi-billion? Sure it is. But I don't get to use any of Oregon's money.
Yeah.
See, the fact that they make, I don't know, 70 million or 90 million or 120 million, whatever Oregon makes, doesn't impact me, you know, doesn't help my bottom line. So anyway, and not to mention, you know, on the collective bargaining front, like how many players don't ever play. And when you think about collective bargaining, let's say in the NFL, I've never seen the non-revenue sports that the Atlanta Falcons have. I've never seen their golf team. I've never seen the Atlanta Falcons track team, right? Because they don't have it. But as a member of higher education and being a part of that, the NCAA requires us to have at least 16 sports. And the NFL does not require that. The NBA does not require that. And so, you know, to collectively bargain and use all those dollars that may be generated primarily from football and men's basketball. And depending on the sport or the school, I mean, the next would be either women's basketball or baseball, depends on where you are. Those sports and the TV rights around those sports fund the department, but we've got 18 sports here at UAB. So if somehow I had to share all this television revenue with just two sports, what happens to these other sports?
Sure.
I mean, it's nonsensical. And then, of course, some of the lawmakers. So, well, you're going to have to keep them. That's nicely said by somebody that doesn't apparently pay bills. I guess you don't pay bills in your own house. So it's a really unique time for sure. But the schools that are, you know, moving around or looking around, you know, Greg Sankey's not worried right now, just like, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC are not worried about this because they have the highest, you know, they're currently getting the largest television payouts of any league. So they're not really worried. Greg Sankey's not worried about this. He's not worried about losing somebody. But Jim Phillips at the ACC obviously is worried. And the Big 12 has added members. I would say that's a sign of a positive thing happening. But so did the ACC. They added members.
What would you say the Big 12 did that the Pac-12 did not? Because when the Big 12 lost Texas and Oklahoma, everyone just thought it was going to fall apart. You're losing two of your biggest pieces. And yeah, quite frankly, they didn't miss a beat, almost like they saw it coming. Was there something the Pac-12, what was the difference between the two?
I think they were able to get in front. And I don't want to speak for any of these other universities who I really, frankly, have no idea what they thought. But it appears as though, you know, Colorado, who used to be in the Big 12, left for the Pac-12, I don't know, 15 years ago or whatever, must not have been as satisfied with their relationship in the Pac-12 and the media promotion around that for the university as they thought that it would be. And so they had an interest in going back. And I think that the two Arizonas and Utah didn't want to get left and figured that they better move as there started to be talk around UCLA and Southern Cal and Washington and Oregon leaving. I think they got out before they got left, and they just sort of all moved because they were afraid if they didn't, what would that mean? And what would it mean is ask Pat Chun at Washington State or Scott Barnes at Washington State what it means. And they just entered into an agreement for their Olympic sports to play in the West Coast Conference.
Yeah.
And that's a dramatic difference in terms of competition. And I hate it for them. I hate it for the student athletes that are now going to travel all the way across country go from North Carolina to California and back, and New Jersey to California and back. I know what they're saying is, well, it wouldn't be that many times, you know, not even every team would do that every year. I guess that's true, but wow, it's just a lot. And it almost appears as though, maybe this is crazy, but conferences could sort of dissolve altogether. You know, with what would be best from a competitive equity standpoint is if the NCAA had the television rights for all of college football, mm-hmm. rather than each conference doing it. Now that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But if they did, then what we at UAB get would be the same amount of television revenue as Texas. And that's why that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. Because that would create too much competitive equity, but that would create real competition and probably make things more interesting.
He's the athletic director for the UAB Blazers, UABSports.com. Before we get into some classic rock, I do want to mention here, depending on when you're actually hearing the show, a big basketball game going on tomorrow against Drake down there at Bar 2 Arena. I want to make sure that if, in fact, you have not gotten your tickets or you're hearing this for the first time, and, of course, you can podcast this as many times as you want, 2 o'clock on Friday. Just I love those 2 o'clock. I love those holiday schedules. I think it's going to be fantastic. I'm going to have the whole Curry family down there, so we're looking forward to that. Yeah. It's going to be fantastic. So make sure you check out UABSports.com, UABSports.com. Get your basketball tickets. Fun, exciting squad to watch with, of course, Andy Kennedy's bunch. There was a list. So sometimes I'm occasionally looking off, and I'm always trying to find things to update us on classic rock. Because you are a classic rock aficionado. I can't just pull things out of my backside and make it look like I'm pulling some wool over your eyes. I have to come to the table with some good substantial stuff. So I saw this interesting list, and these are classic rock fans who hated these songs from their favorite classic rock bands.
Okay.
For example, Cheap Trick, The Flame. People who are huge Cheap Trick fans hate the song The Flame. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. Yeah.
Which I certainly understand. And that's one of those songs where, and if you read the backstory on that, Rick Nielsen, Robin Zander, they did not want the song. It wasn't a song that was written by them. In a lot of cases, and the one song that I think of, and I'm pretty sure that they actually wrote it, and certainly they sang it. But Home Sweet Home from Motley Crue. I remember the first time I heard that song, I thought, oh man, this is a rock ballad. Of course, we did this top 10 at 10 thing on this radio station up in Hamilton, Ohio. It was 96 Rock. You probably remember it. And that song was number one for like a year and a half.
Yeah, forever.
Because if you were into girls, 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 man, you didn't want to hear your favorite classic rock band, your favorite heavy metal band playing this ballad, Home Sweet Home.
It's a great one, man.
But it was. So I want to throw a couple other ones out there. What song from REM do you believe is the song that most REM fans absolutely hate? Let's go Shiny Happy People. That's one of the songs.
Yeah, that'd be easy.
One of the songs a lot of people are really not into. Do you want to take a stab? And I'm throwing this out. Obviously, you have not looked at the list.
This is hard, Tony, because the songs that would fit into this category, I have tried to block from my brain.
I know, right?
If you want me to pull that out,
For example, Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire. I remember hearing that song for the first time thinking, this doesn't even sound like Billy Joel. What are they doing?
Doesn't really fit.
A band that they wrote a lot of their own songs, but a lot of their biggest hits were not written by them at all. But the song These Dreams from Heart. That's another one of those soft, you know,
Super
popular, but I mean,
super popular.
If you were into Crazy on You or Barracuda, and all of a sudden you're hearing These Dreams. And I'm just going through some of these. This is perfect. You're a big Kiss fan. What would be the Kiss song that actually charted more than once because it was made into a disco song?
Yes, I know the song. Oh my God. This is when they drop the makeup.
Yep.
God, I hate this song.
I Was Made for Loving You.
Oh, that's it. Oh,
yeah. Yes.
Listen, when that came on MTV the very first time, I remember I was like, oh, a new song. And I was like, when that started playing and they're dancing, prancing around, and it was a total disco song, and this is my face.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. The Beach Boys, Kokomo. See, now, if you were a true Beach Boys person and you really love the Beach Boys. And then you heard this Kokomo song, which really sounded like it was something that was absolutely created. It was kind of like we built the city for rock and roll, Jefferson Starship, who I really liked. But then all of a sudden there was this thing, this man-made created. There's almost like an AI type of song that was written for songs. Shakedown from Bob Seger's on this list, which I think is really interesting. Aerosmith, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. Another one of those songs where if you're thinking Love in an Elevator, you're thinking Back in the Saddle Again, Sweet Emotion, all of a sudden you get the song I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. It's usually some type of long ballad. It's kind of a slower song.
There's a lot of songs on that album that are not great.
Yeah. Genesis, Invisible Touch, which was another one. Nothing Else Matters from Metallica.
Oh, no, that's a great one. I love that song.
You like that song?
I'll tell you, but I could have dropped the entire album, The Great Spaghetti Incident from Guns N' Roses. There's like one song on that album that's worth listening to, and the rest of it I think is terrible. And then they released Chinese Democracy that there's just like, I don't want to hear any of it. If I go to their concert and they play any of it, I literally know none of it because I didn't like any of it.
Let me ask you this. And there's a ton of them on here. You can go to TonyCurryRadio.net, go to the Ultimate Classic Rock page, and you can see the list of these songs. When Rod Stewart came out with Do You Think I'm Sexy? And some people thought it was awesome. A lot of people thought, what in the hell are you doing? Now, this was a situation where Rod Stewart was rock and roll, man. I mean, you go back and listen to Faces, you go back to listen to the way he sounded, the songs he said, every picture tells a story. I mean, he was rock and roll, period. Right. Now he had the poof hair and he got the ladies and he wore the really tight clothing and this, that, and the other. And the ladies absolutely loved him. You just look at his list of former wives and you can tell how much he loved the ladies. But when he came out with that song, a lot of people from his record label were like, hey, there's this thing called disco going on right now. And I really think that you know, just one album with some of this off, because it also had Hot Legs on it, which, by the way, is one of my favorite Rod Stewart songs. And that thing rocks.
He's awesome live.
Yeah.
Rod Stewart is awesome live.
No, he was good. And, of course, he just came out.
This is a good list. We should do this later. We should come back to this in the spring.
All right, let's do it. Let's get after it. All right. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Have yourself a wonderful time. Hope to see the basketball game tomorrow. If I don't, have yourself a wonderful and blessed holiday season, and we'll catch up next week.
Same.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, man. Good pal.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.